Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Comics. Welcome to Talking Comics, episode 275. I'm your host, Mara Wood, and I'm here with Bob Ryer.
Happy March!
Joy Bertino.
I'm hyped, let's do it!
And Carolyn Coca.
Hello!
Carolyn has graciously agreed to join us this evening since Steve is in the middle of moving, quite literally.
Life, yeah. Man.
Yeah, man. I don't know. I remember when I was moving. It's the worst. It's the worst. But seems like everything, he's on top of everything, which is good. So,
Literally, he's sleeping on the boxes, I think, at this point.
But unfortunately, when you're in the middle of moving, comic reading and things like that have to be put on the back burner. And also Timing and factoring and space and computers packed up and all that stuff. So he will be joining us next week, which we are looking forward to his return.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So I guess last week was the soft relaunch.
And next week is rebirth. Solid.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Oh, wow. And then we have afterbirth. Yeah.
All right. Well, we've got a lot of comics to talk about tonight. And also, I didn't realize that Logan comes out this week.
Yeah.
Did you guys know that?
Yeah, I'm a little worried, though. I'm afraid it's... I really don't do well with remotely realistic violence. And from what I'm reading so far, it seems like this is a lot.
Yeah, there's going to be some viscera.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, but, you know, part of me is like, I love that. I mean, I'm excited about Laura.
Yeah, of course.
I'm here for Laura, so I'm hoping they do justice by her. I will know next week, so...
Oh yeah.
But anyway, we'll talk more about Logan once it comes out. I'm just real excited. I did not know. I don't keep track of these dates, so it's just I leave that up to Matt, where he's like, "Hey, we gotta go see Logan this week. Are we? Is it out?" So
they've been playing Logan trailers like on TV, but also every movie I've gone to, regardless of genre or studio, they pop a Logan trailer in there. I saw Get Out over the weekend, and I was like, Logan. 2 weeks ago, saw Cure for Wellness, Logan. It was just all over the place. I think it's going to be
a movie for everyone.
Exactly. It's going to be great.
All right. Well, you know what was great this week? Hulk number 3. Or at least I thought so. I'm sure Bob has different opinions.
but I'm going to ask you a professional question at the end. How's that? Okay.
That's perfectly fine.
Okay. Yeah, it is Hulk number 3. It's Mariko Tamaki, Nico Leong. I hope I'm doing that right. It is Jen being Jen. That is her way she's trying to put herself back together after the events of Civil War II. It's her case with Maisie, who's was a normal person, was a human being after a... Ooh, what was that? It's a voice from the ether. I'm being criticized. I haven't even begun yet. And in the wake of that beating, she's developed these other powers. Her landlord, not so thrilled. So this is something that seems up Jen's alley, in that there's an identification, I guess, as her powers came to her accidentally from all those years ago. I don't know if anyone remembers the She-Hulk's actual origin. She was a lawyer in L.A., her cousin was on the run and was hanging out with her. She ends up shot in some gangland thing over some case she's doing. He gives her a blood transfusion. Wasn't that a great idea?
Wasn't thinking.
Come on, Bruce. Yeah. Like, you are the smartest people on earth, and that's what you come up with. So you can see how she relates. there's a moment here where Patsy shows up that really threw me for a loop. It is well done. It is very emotional, but it is also a very, very hard read. One point, Jen does make a comment, you know, what's worse, dying or getting caught close to death and getting turned around and dragged back into the world?
Mm-hmm.
So, for me, it's a good story, definitely a hard read, particularly this issue with that Patsy thing, because, you know, Patsy Walker number 8, where it was Patsy at her bedside, which is referenced here, which is so, so touching. So, I'm still struggling. So what's your take, Mara? Talk to me.
I, as you know, had just finished reading Dan Slott's She-Hulk series,
mm-hmm.
which you can catch on Legendary Runs. I enjoyed it a lot. And I'm this series is growing on me, in that I'm still enjoying it. I'm still eager to learn this different facet of Jen. It's a little bit disappointing to know how much she doesn't like that She-Hulk persona of hers. But man, I'm so anxious for it to come through. The covers keep showing it, and I keep thinking, like, oh, is this the issue? Is this the issue? But those comments about death and being close to death and then coming back, I think are very poignant. And I think that, you know, Jen suffering from some sort of post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, she went through some severe trauma and is still trying to cope with it, slamming the laptop and breaking it, watching mm-hmm. cooking videos incessantly and triggering. In fact, there was one point where she said, you know, trigger.
Yep.
And pushing the people she loves away, even though they have nothing but kindness for them. So I think it's a heavy comic, and we're only 3 issues in, but I still think it's well done. It's just kind of sad to go from happy-go-lucky She-Hulk to Jen Walters mm-hmm. trying to deal with the aftermath.
Well, this is I would never say this isn't an amazingly well-done story. Lots of layers. It is those things layered onto this character in a way that is, I guess, doubly... It's not disappointing. It's doubly hard to read. Early on in the book, Jen's in an elevator, and she sees a reflection in the elevator door, and it's of herself as the She-Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
She's trying to put her life back together, but, you know, what kind of life and at what emotional cost? Because to me, she's denying what she has long accepted as the best part of herself.
Mm.
So is this sort of self-flagellation really self-abuse in a way? What is she punishing herself for not stopping what she could have? Or is she punishing herself for surviving? What's the psychological take on this, Dr. Mara?
I mean, I think that's survivor's guilt. In fact, she doesn't want to talk about Bruce. She doesn't want to bring him up. You know, I'm hoping that they dive more into this, and I'm eager to know if Mariko Tamaki is talking to someone with a background in psychology. I always think of Gail Simone consulting with Dr. Leda Mendy about mm-hmm. Barbara Gordon and what she would be going through if this happened. So I'd be interested in knowing that, but I don't know if they have or have not. I don't think they've made it public.
I wonder if maybe she is, though, given Supergirl.
Hmm.
Ah. Okay. Tying that together, too, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very mm-hmm. intriguing.
We will be discussing Supergirl being super later.
Yes. Yes. Such a good comic. But before that, let's do Spider-Woman.
Yeah, there's talk about a 180 in its own way. It's Spider-Woman 16. It's Dennis Hopeless, Veronica Fish, Rachel Rosenberg on color. It's our finale of the Rogers Dead arc. As just at the moment when you thought things were going to be better for Roger having survived due to having some weird porcupine armor. He's been kidnapped by the Hobgoblin. And Jess, who's a mess from being pumpkin bombed, is still out to rescue him. Roger's internal monologue here regarding Jessica, why he loves her, the artwork, Dennis Hopeless's script, it all just ties together so beautifully into really how the first run, too, all the way back into a couple of those oddball Spider-Verse issues, were putting together this new Jessica Drew in a way that played off of what she was over in Avengers Assemble when Kelly Sue was doing that book, some of the new Avengers stuff. It's as if it embraced all the versions of this character that's ever been, back to the private detective days. Nice surprise guest star in this one. Charming send-off as we get to this. I got to the last page, though, and see the to-be-continued arc ad at the end, and it's like, oh, has anyone seen the movie The Misfits?
No.
Arthur Miller's film?
Yeah.
He wrote for his then-wife, Marilyn Monroe. It's Clark Gable and Marilyn Monroe, Montgomery Clift, Eli Wallach. Anyway, it's Gable's an older fellow, older cowboy. Marilyn's out there, too. And I'm going to spoil a 55-year-old movie. I hope no one minds. They're in a truck. This doesn't spoil much. They're in a truck sort of driving down the road that's how the movie ends. They're just driving away. And when you consider that both those people, Clark Gable and Marilyn Monroe, would be dead within 6 months. It was each of their last films.
Yep.
And so I look at this, and it's Roger and Jess and little Jerry in the car driving out into the desert. It's like, no, no, because I think next issue is the last issue.
Which kind of is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. But this one was just so good. Like you said, Bob, Roger's internal monologue is just so Roger. And I just love the part where he realizes he can help. And the way he says it, can I say the way that he realizes he's going to help, what he says, or is that?
Sure, yeah, go for it.
Super funny thing he says, I'm not some dude in distress. I'm the all kinds of special characters, porcupine.
Yeah. And it's
just so Roger, because it's like the least menacing thing you've ever heard in your life. Yeah. You know, someone saying I'm the porcupine.
Hey, whatever works. Whatever works for you.
I also like the Deus Ex Machina that helped them out at the end.
Yes.
Yeah. I think Like you guys said, this is a great issue, great series, good ending to this storyline, and I can't wait for issue 17.
I know, but I don't want it to end. I don't want this to end.
You know, all good things must come to an end, and unfortunately, it has to end.
Are you saying that because it's the name of the series finale of Star Trek: The Next Generation, Mara?
Star Trek on the brain. Yeah. No, but. You know, just a quick tangent. I like it when comic series ends, but they end well.
Yeah.
It's hard because it's bittersweet, but I do like that. Just the wrap up. So I'm hoping issue 17 is a good wrap up so that we can come back to the character after a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
She's already had 3 series, or I guess, why not a fourth?
Why not? Why not? Yeah. Bob, what about Scarlet Witch?
Speaking of things coming to an end, my curse lives, is all I'm going to say. Scarlet Witch 15, James Robinson, in this case, art by Vanessa Del Rey, colors by Jordi Belair. Wanda, in this issue, saves a young boy from demonic possession, except that's not really the case. It's a ruse by a villain who we know from all the way back in that Avengers annual, the Emerald Warlock, Declan Dane, who was introduced by James Robinson back then. And he's apparently been behind a lot of what's been going on as Wanda wandered down the Witch's Highway to try to save magic and reconnect with her mom. Declan is just looking to collect more and more magic, and this young boy has a lineal connection to older mystics. Wanda does just some amazing work. James Robinson, speaking of amazing work, has really spent all these issues reestablishing Wanda's character and heroism, and it just really pays off here in this sort of aftermath issue to those big events with a smaller event. She has a lovely little conversation with the now resurrected Agatha Harkness, and they go back and forth as they have been through this series. And you get a wonderful finale as Wanda tries to reclaim something else, too. There's a long sequence as she speaks to the Vision. And our final page is her sitting. I'm spoiling this one, and I don't care. She sits around a table and declares to some shadowy folks, I want to be an Avenger. And, yeah, Wanda was always one of the absolute greatest Marvel characters of the Silver Age. And in the wake of No More Mutants and being a mad woman and all the things, sort of the focus disappeared probably for the last 30 years, probably since John Byrne was doing the Avengers and had her sort of front and center, maybe some of the early Wade Perez issues. And James Robinson writes in such a way, was back with his DC work with Golden Age and Starman, it's finding those parts of the older characters are somehow neglected characters and coming back around to what works without it feeling like archaeology. It's not, oh, I remember this story, I'm going to retell this story. No, I'm going to find that core and make it happen. His Invaders when he did it, the Squadron Supreme that he just finished, his Fantastic Four run was excellent. Moving on, I know he has some more Marvel work coming, and I'm sure it'll continue to be great. So for those folks who have been passing on Scarlet Witch, and I don't know how you could with those David Aja covers all these months. There's absolutely sensational. It'll be three trades when you're done, and it would make a lovely read.
Excellent. Excellent. Mighty Captain Marvel, number 2.
Which is actually number 3 because they snuck a zero in on it, right?
Yeah.
It's just semantics.
Yeah. Look, here it's Margaret Stoll and Ramon Rosanas. Mm-hmm. And it's still Carol in space. I should have done the whole Spaceballs things. Yeah, exactly. which has its own drawbacks. But she's in charge of Alpha Flight, and there's other stuff going on. Her powers are on the fritz. She actually is punching holes through things. She's not trying to. And while this is all going on, the TV crew that's filming the cable show about her, they're supposed to help pay for the Alpha Flight station. What are they charging for commercials on this show? if you can pay for a space station with the commercial from the mighty Captain Marvel show. Yeah, while this is going on, again, they're trying to set up the wall around Earth to stop the aliens from getting in. Nice little bit of business. And there's a shapeshifter on board. And I don't want to give this one away too much, but we have Carol's powers completely out of whack. And as they think, it's as she's in proximity to our new refugee character, Bean. So I'm not sure where that's going yet. I thought it was a lot of help. Carol, at the end of the issue, is heading out to the Antarctic for some help. So we're reconnecting to some of those Earthbound characters, I hope. Mm-hmm. For me, this has been much more the old Carol, even if the Civil War thing gets mentioned here a little bit. Definitely improvement over everything that's come since Kelly Sue left. So I am happy, if not elated. I could use some more Earthbound stories, but I'm happier with Captain Marvel for the first time in about a year. Mm. Carolyn, what did you feel about this issue?
I really liked it, and I've liked all three of these issues so far. And it's not – I do agree with you that I miss that cast. You know, Kit and her mother, and it's hard not to. I would say, though, that there was some nice camaraderie here with the Alpha Flight gang.
Yeah.
And I like that. And the whole thing about the TV show, on the one hand, it's totally ridiculous. On the other hand, the way that they're showing the character, the way that they're showing I don't know how to put it. Here's our comic characters, and then next to them are the actors that are supposed to be portraying them on their TV show, Cap in Marvel.
Yeah.
Cap apostrophe in Marvel, like Cap and Crunch. And it's just hilarious because the one that's supposed to be Wendy, you know, Wendy Kawasaki, is like, has blonde curly hair.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Supposed to be Captain Marvel, has like super long blonde hair, and she's unzipped down past a bra would be, but apparently she doesn't need a bra. Yeah. And then there's a combination of two characters that combine, I'm just going to say it, into a dog.
With green fur.
Which has green fur. That tells you who one of the characters of the combination is supposed to be. So I think that whole conceit, it's just like a funny little side note. And I like that kind of lightness. So yes, overall, I'm pleased with the writing and I'm pleased with the art. I'm not so sure about the bean thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm not so sure what the Antarctica thing is. But I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to finding out.
I forgot to mention to you guys, I read this one too. All the same sentiments. hashtag blessed.
I actually wrote that down, but I neglected it. When I and emoji, prayer hands.
Yes, prayer hands.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur.
We are at number 16, and this one is surviving. It is a book I haven't got canceled yet. It is Amy Reeder, Brandon Montclair, Natasha Bustos, and Tamra Bonvillain on colors.
Tamra Bonvillain!
There he is.
Thank you, Joey. Much better at that than I am. At the end of last issue, Lunella had shown up in Greenwich Village over on Bleecker Street to pay a visit to the doctor. And we open this issue with her flying through the astral plane. And she's not in her element. This is a science girl. So while she's flying around here, we still have Devil Dinosaur. We have quadratic equations left and right, little bits of technological business. Done really beautifully. It's probably the first really cosmic sequence to date in the book. There have been some Kree things in space. But Ms. Bustos really knocks it out of the park. Eventually, we have Doctor Strange at her bedside. They're wandering through the vagaries of what's magic and faith and what you should believe in. And while they're having this discussion, and of course, Lunella is sort of, oh, stop, magic, please. And Doctor Strange is really trying to work her through this. And wandering into the room is about a your Valkyrie-sized devil dinosaur. Because he can't have a dinosaur wandering around his house. So he has given her, he gives to Lunella eventually the other part of it. But in this case, it is sort of the tincture of tininess. Because, you know, again, you have to make these things work. There's also eventually, though, the gravy of giant, which comes into play later, because while they're having all these discussions, it is Halloween, so knocking on the door are people cosplaying as herself and Devil Dinosaur. And Lunella wanders out onto the street with these folks, and we've got a little Thor, a little Miles, a little Sam Wilson, and Devil Dinosaur on a leash. Dr. Doom shows up, and he is not happy at all about not being the smartest one there is at this point. So that gets into a nice little give and take. We have a now giant Lunella, a little devil dinosaur. Colossal fun, no pun intended, or maybe so. It's just the way that my mind works on a glass of whiskey. And all the way through, we're 17 issues into that, and there are always a surprise as there is here on our last page, as there are some other guests who appear who seem to be from the future, based on someone's mustache and someone's kind of old and scraggly looking, rather like he's you know been through some wars. I'm so happy it's continuing. Happy the character is finding her way into the Wasp, also over into. What's the new Avengers that's coming then? Why am I drawing a blank? We talked about it last week.
You mean Champions?
No, it's the... oh, goodness. No, I don't have last week's notes.
Avengers Monsters Unleashed Avengers?
It's one of the 14 Avengers books Lunella has found her way into.
It's Secret Warriors.
Secret Warriors, right. Thank you, Joey.
Oh.
So it is really, it's been really great having this happen the way it did. It builds very slowly to just a very, very nice spot in this universe. So Moon Girl, Devil Dinosaur, we did our book club on it some while back. That's the first six. You can catch up from there and then buy the new ones. Just saying.
All right. Carolyn, you checked out a new book from Marvel this past week.
I did. Don't nobody else read Elektra besides me?
No, ma'am. No. Tell us why we should.
I actually do think you should. So the writer is Matt Owens, artist Juan Cabal, colors Antonio Fabela and Marcio Meniz. I hope that's right. Anyway, the cover grabbed me right away, to be honest. Did anyone see the cover?
Yes, it was amazing.
Yeah, so, I mean, not only was it just really striking in terms of style, but I was so surprised by what she was wearing. I mean, she, like, has clothes on.
And, yeah.
Like, she's wearing sort of flat boots and, like, kind of spandexy leggings. Nothing flowing or strappy or high-heeled for a villain to grab onto. And she still looks just as gorgeous and just as badass as she always does. There's still a couple, you know, there are red highlights on it. You definitely know it's her.
Well, anyway, it looks like the Daredevil Season 2 version of her, right? In terms of the costumes?
Yeah. I mean, not identical, but... But
inspired.
Something you could walk around in, ish, in real life. So we're kind of reintroduced to her in Las Vegas, and we're not sure why she's there. We don't find out why she's there. We see that there are certain things on her mind in some flashback panels. And so you kind of wonder, okay, well, and she's in disguise. So, like, what is she doing here? And is she going to act like her old self? Well, it only takes about half the issue for that to happen because her bartender at a bar has a bit of a black eye. And so Elektra can't let this go. And so there are a couple sequences where she's, let's say, getting retribution for this woman. And she is just taking dudes out. And it is so good. So except for one panel that is like squarely, it's actually very narrow, wide but narrow, and on the right hand side is like just her butt, and on the left hand side is like five guys that she's about to take down. Except for that one panel, that one particular framing, I did like the art, but I'm just saying if you got really used to Mike Del Mundo in the last run, this is not that. I mean, this is definitely a different style, but still really great. So I think that this new team has the character in both thought-wise, dialogue-wise, and I said both, and now I'm saying three things. That's bad grammar. Thought-wise and art-wise. So I would say, yeah, check it out.
Awesome. Excellent. Bob, have you been reading Infamous Iron Man?
No, I can't say as I have. And that's probably surprising in some ways and not in others, probably.
It's very surprising to me. Because I mean, Ben Grimm has been in this series pretty extensively. Mm-hmm. Mostly because Doom is Iron Man. Yeah, you can't trust him.
Yeah.
Dr. Doom. But this series, you know, five issues in, we have the appearance of Doom's mother.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Who has come forward, finally, to let him know that she had been ashamed of him for all those years.
Oh, that sucks.
And now that he has finally embraced a more heroic nature, she is proud of him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's a happy sad. But what's interesting to me, and I'm going to go ahead and spoil it, because the last page just, like, made my jaw drop. And we're always talking about Fantastic Four. Where are they at? When are they coming back? Cynthia, Doom's mother, comes back to whatever her hidey hole is, her cauldron, and she's, you know, looking around, and there's a voice talking to her. And that voice ends up being a man who she calls Reed.
Oh my God.
So I don't think it's our Reed Richards. I believe
Bob hasn't spoken. He must have fallen over.
I'm pretty sure I know who it has to be based on the end of a few other things over the last couple of years.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. So I don't believe that it is Reed Richards of our universe. I believe it is mm-hmm. Ultimate Reed.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. it's still...
The mastermind or whatever his name is?
Yeah.
It's just maker.
The fixer or whatever fixer, he maker, is. Or
something
yeah.
like that.
The maker.
Yes. Yeah. But I think it's interesting that this series seems to be the one that is drawing heavily from the Fantastic Four mythos and trying to integrate that into Iron Man comic, which is not... should not be titled Iron Man anymore.
Well, I have a question about that because I haven't read any of them. I know the conceit is that he's Iron Man. Is it like when Doc Ock was Spider-Man and he does kind of like try to do his best in the role in his own way?
It seems to be that so far.
Mm. So without the possession angle.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So he's got his own Iron Man costume with a big cape, of course.
Of course.
Of course.
And once you wear a cape, you don't stop wearing a cape.
Yeah, you can't.
Once you go cape, you don't go back.
Part of the aesthetic.
But kind of this Iron Man, this version of Iron Man is a mix of technology and magic.
Oh.
So it's basically just Doom with a different costume.
Hmm. Okay.
And that's really, that's all it is. And, you know, we've gone, I don't know how long since, I guess since Secret Wars ended, with Dr. Doom kind of being Dr. Nice, Dr. Non-Doom.
Well, Reed sent him back, Reed and Franklin sent him back kind of fixed.
Yeah. I don't know yet. I don't know, but I am interested in seeing where this Reed angle comes in and why he's working with Cynthia and what their motivations are.
We're only on number five.
We're only on number five.
Has it been coming out relatively monthly?
Yeah, once a month.
I feel like this book's been around forever.
Well, this book was supposed to start after Civil War II ended.
Ah.
But I believe it was one of the ones that came out before it did, like Invincible Iron Man.
Oh, like it like dropped one and then it never ended, so they had to like wait kind of thing?
Yeah, I think they just kept going. I don't know. Whenever Civil War II was supposed to end, this is a follow-up from it.
Interesting.
So, all right. Black Panther, how's that been going?
Well, I think... unless, Joey, you want to talk about it first?
I'll start. Yeah, sure. Black Panther number 11, Ta-Nehisi Coates and Chris Brouse is on art for this one. Confirm? Can anyone confirm?
I can confirm that on this one there were multiple artists, and I kind of didn't write them all down. There were at least three or four.
That may be part of why.
Of each thing.
I responded the way that I did. But anyway, Black Panther number 11 is the resolution to Coates' kind of first massive arc here on the book, Nation Under Our Feet. And one of the things that I've always really liked about Black Panther under Coates' direction has been its handling of T'Challa as politician, as superhero, as king. And that has indirectly, or perhaps directly, caused the book to be a very talky, heady book in a lot of ways. A lot of discussion of, you know, religion and a lot of discussion of, like I said, politics and who gets to be in control and what is the nature of revolution and what is T'Challa's role and does he deserve that role? A couple issues, they reintroduced Shuri, came back from the kind of like netherworld that she was floating around in, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. And... number 11 is sort of the climax in that the book takes it in a direction that it hasn't been going in, which is a very sort of traditional is the wrong word, but more standard kind of action-packed, let's bring all the factions together and they're going to fight and people are going to shoot things at each other and blah, blah, blah. And to be honest, I don't think that's an effective position for this book to occupy. I know that it is a superhero book and it kind of has to get there eventually, but I was kind of let down by that element of it. I kind of like it when my Ta-Nehisi Coates Black Panther is negotiating really complex conversations about, you know, the role of authority in the modern world, you know? And this was a fine way to end. I'm glad that Coates is staying with the book for a little bit longer. I'm not surprised, Carolyn, that you mentioned that it's multiple artists, because that was one of the things that also was a bit of a letdown with this issue. Some of the staging and the choreography I didn't necessarily enjoy, especially because I found this book from the beginning to be so consistent artistically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So this was a bit of a letdown in terms of a resolution to the arc, but I still really enjoy the book. And I'm glad that it's sticking around going forward.
I can see why you would say let down in terms of the structure of it, because there haven't been other issues that have been where the plot has progressed in quite this way. And I think you're saying standard or traditional is more than fair, because it is exactly what you said. It's like all these different things are coming together at this moment. You know, all these different. I don't want to say sides, different factions that we've seen, different philosophies, different elements, they all come together in this issue.
Yeah.
However, even though that part was sort of felt so different from other issues, which I think that the writing was still the same super thoughtful.
Oh, yeah.
Lyrical. I mean, it's just it sings in your head when you read the words, and everything is just so well put, and the seriousness and the weight of all of it is there, just like it is in all of the issues. And right, so you see Black Panther's side of things, and like you said, Shuri is with him and a couple of other characters that we've known along the way, and sort of the older philosopher guy. How do you say his name?
Changamir.
Changamir, okay.
Changamir.
I don't know.
You just say it with such confidence that it sounds like it's right.
Yeah, when you say it that way, it sounds fine. So he's sort of like this sort of philosopher type, and he's sort of addressing people who may probably are under a spell and telling them he knows they're afraid and he knows they have hate, but they need a new way. And one man is not the answer. And so, I mean, that one man is not the answer thing has been underlying all of it so far.
Right.
And so it's not, I mean, it's not a spoiler to say that the way that it gets pulled together at the very end is that T'Challa and his allies are, I mean, there's other stuff that happens in the plot that you can see, but there's, he and his allies are sort of have this power walk at the end. And it's like, but we are no man, we are a nation. Right. And instead of saying the end at the end, it says a beginning.
Right.
So it's kind of like you said, this is sort of the end of this first really long arc and where it goes from here, and all those questions about authority and leadership are just going to continue on. So I really did like it, but I agree with you that it was different from the others.
Yeah, that Changamir stuff has been one of the highlights for me, watching his progression as a character. And the interesting thing about the whole arc, and this is something that I've been saying kind of right along, is I definitely want to go back and read 1 through 11.
Oh, absolutely.
Straight through again, because T'Challa's positioning in this book so far, and the way that Coates has been using T'Challa, is the book starts with him positioned as the one man.
Yes.
And then as the book goes on, it's about him negotiating that, which is always sort of, which is one of the best parts about the character in a lot of ways that makes him different than all the other people that he hangs out with on the Avengers and the crew and all that stuff. You know, the way that he negotiates is that position. And I think Coates has been handling that so interestingly, and it hasn't been sort of straightforward all the way through. So I'm interested to kind of go back and read 1 through 11 and really kind of see it as a single story, because I think that's how it
was written.
was written and should be read, which is another conversation to have about sort of the monthly, month-to-month sustainability of some of these books. But
yeah.
Black Panther's awesome, you know, all the things that I was sort of down about this issue, that's not putting it like it wasn't like something awful, you know, it was really good. It was just different from the last few issues that I've really been enjoying.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Joey, you have a whole mess of indie books on the table this month or this week.
I'm going to bang these out. Here
we go.
Gonna
let you loose.
All right, here we go. Quantum Teens or Go, number one. Y'all didn't read this?
Oh, it's on my list. I didn't get to it this week.
Magdalene Visaggio and Eric Donovan with colors by Claudia Aguirre, Black Mad Studios. I want to ask Mads, like, what's with Black Mad Studios? Like, what do they got for you? Because Kim were great, and Quantum Teens, she's doing that for them too. So it's really cool. Anyway, we have two characters, Sumesh and Natalie, and they're the Quantum Teens. Okay, I don't think they actually call themselves that, but they're basically like these techno punk nerdy junkers in high school who are trying to, like, I think make a time machine. I can't confirm that, but they're trying to make this time machine. They're going to try and get in with this XE tech gang called Odyssey, who ride motorcycles and have tattoos and do science, I guess, so that they can get their project off the ground. Things get wild and they lead to a crazy cliffhanger. It's no secret that I'm a huge fan of Visaggio now, especially after Kim and Kim and Quantum Teens was totally on my list. She's got a clear voice, focused on trans characters. Natalie is trans, and it's the way that it's so authentic, you know, the way that she weaves in these issues and the challenges of that into this crazy wacky sci-fi that's humorous and fun and sincere. It's a great first issue, and I'll definitely be continuing on with this one. Darkness Visible is another number one from IDW. Mike Carey and Arvind Ethan David writing, Brendan Cahill and Joanna LaFuente on art. It's twisted, man. Twisted book. The world of darkness visible is split between normal people and the Shaitan, which are like people with demons living inside of them. It's kind of cool.
Never good, yeah.
Yeah, totally. Our protagonist is Detective Danny Ashton, who, along with his daughter Maggie, get caught up in a crazy hostage situation, gangland, Shaitan battle with all these demons and stuff. Things get wild here, and there's also a crazy cliffhanger here as well. So cool first issue. What I really enjoyed about this was the artwork. I'm a big Stuart Immonen fan, and what Brendan Cahill and Joanna LaFuente do is very reminiscent of that. So very vibrant visuals with a pretty cool horror premise and a little bit of crime procedural, and another cool first issue. We're checking out Darkness Visible. What else did I read? Loose Ends number 2. Remember that one?
Yeah, I didn't read number 2.
You don't worry, because I kind of don't really know what's happening in this book.
All right.
There's the B plot with like the drug deal stuff, which was confusing in issue number 1 too. Doubly as confusing here in issue number 2. The A plot with the kind of shocking accidental shooting that happened in issue number 1. There were some important revelations and flashbacks regarding those protagonists who were kind of on the run. But I just wasn't feeling issue number 2. I love the rural noir. I love the Southern crime genre. It's really cool, but it just seems like, I don't know. I just don't have a handle on Loose Ends yet. It's a lot of loose ends in Loose Ends. Let me put it that way. Yeah, you like that? What else? You didn't read Old Guard?
My week has been awful.
Oh, yeah. Bob did. I saw Greg Rucka's name, and I was like, oh, Mara has to read this.
I know. Hey, it is on my iPad ready to go.
Yeah.
It's there.
Wait, Rucka. What?
New Rucka book.
new record book called The Old Guard. I'm going to tell you about it right now.
All right, go.
So Greg Rucka, Leandro Fernandez, Daniela Miwa. Fernandez was on The Discipline, I think, with was that also Mike Carey? Maybe. I don't know. But I really love The Discipline. And there's just like this hyper naturalism to his artwork that I really like. So anyway, we got this story of one woman, three men who cannot die ever. Andy, Nikki, Joe, and Booker. And they live forever. And because they live forever, governments hire them to do black ops work because they're immortal. And they'll just send them into nasty places to get the job done. So the team gets hired to do this job, a job that they agree to because the government suit that shows up is like, oh, well, you know, these bad guys, they have child hostages, et cetera, be the good person, et cetera, everything will be okay. But things do not go okay in this issue. I won't talk too much about it, but it's pretty cool. The premise there is really great. The B plot explores this kind of possibility that maybe there are other immortal people out there. I feel like Frank Cho did a book for Boom that had a similar setup. Skybound?
Yeah, I think that's right. Skybound or Skyborn or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. And I found this book better. Let me just.
Okay.
Yeah. I think part of it is like Frank Cho has a very distinct art style.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very clean and it's very kind of bright. And what Rucka and Fernandez are doing here is something just a little bit grittier, and I really like that. So, nice. Bob, you said you read this?
Yeah, I thought the artwork was very, very well done. All the things you're saying, the violence had real weight and consequence to it, particularly the one character who might or might not be one of the others comes to a particularly bad finish, perhaps. The only thing is for me, I saw so many bits and pieces I've seen in other things. So even though they're put together really well here,
yeah.
There's kind of a Lazarus thing.
Yeah.
There's kind of a Wonder Woman thing. There's the Star Trek episode Requiem for Methuselah. There's Vandal Savage. There's Gilgamesh. There's Demon with a Glass Hand.
Yeah. That's a lot of great stuff you just named. Make it for a great book.
This is true. I'm going to need to see more how it plays out. I think Greg's taking those elements and putting them into a very different sort of stew, the whole Black Ops idea, as opposed to just the Immortal Warriors or the Highlanders or something. So I'm intrigued. I'd rather see more black magic, truth be told.
Yeah.
But that's coming back. Mm-hmm. That's coming back. So I'll check out issue two. It's Greg, and he always delivers as the books go on. So it'll build, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. What do I got? One more here? Yes.
Seems like it.
The Belfry. A one-shot from Gabriel Hardman, whom I've been following for a while. He did some Star Wars stuff with Corinna Bechko, his wife, that I loved a while back for Dark Horse, back when Star Wars was back with Dark Horse. Remember that? Good times. He did some work on Agents of Atlas and Hulk and Planet of the Apes for Boom. His big sort of thing now is Invisible Republic, which is also fantastic and totally worth checking out. This is a terrifying little horror one-shot from Image. Very simple setup. Plane crashes on a creepy island inhabited by strange bat creatures. That's pretty much it. But perhaps those creatures aren't so different from the stranded passengers. A lot of fun, really effective horror here. Moody, really affecting artwork. Scratchy, dark, and really compressed. It's 30 pages. It's a one shot, and the beginning and the ending, very clear, straight through. Hardman talks in the back. He shares some of his inspiration and some of his sketches for the book. And he talks about, you know, he does a lot of science fiction and he does a lot of one specific genre. So he wanted to do something different. And he had this kind of image of this bat creature one day. and he wrote this one shot just spinning out of that. And it's a really effective little bit of genre exploration there, which is really cool to see. So The Belfry is also definitely worth checking out.
Nice. Okay, guys, Wonder Woman came out this week.
Yeah, so go for it. Go for it,
Mark. We have to talk about it. issue number 17. This is the Rucka Sharp storyline. I've already forgotten what they're calling it. The Truth. The Truth. And so where we last left off, we were reintroduced to a favorite character from Rucka's first go-around with Wonder Woman, Ferdinand. Which,
yay, Ferdinand! I know it must have been a month ago because we didn't say his name the last time I was on the show.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So he is back. He is out of the shadows. He is, you know, it's one of those situations where it's like, hey, let me know if you ever need some help. Go off and do your own thing, and then suddenly your folks show up saying, hey, we need some help. You're like, oh, I didn't think you'd seriously need it. Okay. trouble follows them as Veronica is trying to manipulate Barbara into becoming the cheetah again. But it's so, I mean, the way that it's done, you just really feel for her. Yes. Barbara, not Veronica. And just the sacrifice that she's prepared to make for these people that she's grown to love. I'm anxious. I'm anxious, especially since we've had a few issues with Diana Prince instead of Diana the Princess.
Mm-hmm.
But things are looking up now. Thank you, Ferdinand. And yeah. Rucka seems to be flexing all the Wonder Woman muscles in this series, where he's taking us from, you know, the insane asylum patient, which has not been my favorite iteration, but he kept it brief, and it seems like it's purposeful. And hopefully we'll dive more into what was going on when she was having, I almost want to call them hallucinations, because that's what it seems like they're trying to portray in this comic. What do you guys think?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I was wondering if we're supposed to think that it's less a hallucination and more that she's seeing into the truth that's inside that tree, kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I'm wondering how.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get the answer.
It's a mystical tree from a mystical island.
I guess magic is the answer.
Yeah, yeah. I like that they had the part on Themyscira also. Mm-hmm. With her mother and with yet another character that was in Rucka's previous run. So one of them is Ferdinand, who I know he's not a Minotaur. I remember someone calling him a Minotaur, and he's like, no, actually, I'm a, I don't remember, Thermitor or something. Yeah. I should have looked that up. But and he was in Rucka's previous run. He was like the cook at the Themysciran embassy, but he was also, all right, look, he looks a lot more animalistic here than he did in the other run. Mm-hmm. In the other run, somehow as a Minotaur, he was like super sexy. I know that sounds weird. Just go look back.
It's like the muscles or something.
And also he was a really great chef and charming and whatever. Here he just kind of looks like a giant hairy animal with a coat and an umbrella, but he's still super cool. But anyway, I wanted to say about, can I say who the other character was from Rucka's run? Yeah. Who is like super duper ripped.
Do it.
And that's Io. Mm. And so in the previous run, she was sort of, the Smith, I guess, of Themyscira.
Like, yeah, she made the weapons.
Yeah, she would make weapons, and she basically would just wear sort of like an apron, because what else do you need when you're a blacksmith besides an apron? And she maybe was a little interested in Diana. Mm. And here she is like, she is just super muscular, much more so than she was before. And I was very happy to see her as well, because she was definitely a beloved character in the old run. And definitely at the end, when Ferdinand arrives at the hospital, I had tears. I'll just say it. Mm-hmm. He holds out a thing, and I was like,
the truth.
Yeah, super duper.
Yeah, that was the second time in within a couple of pages I was tearing up. The Barbara Ann sequence where she's coerced into doing what she's doing to try to save her friends who have saved her previously.
Right.
And how we've connected the past and present stories is really gelling together beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some moments where it was like, it's taken a while to get there. And I think as we're picking up momentum in this story, even if we've had a couple of issues without Wonder Woman as Wonder Woman, the forward momentum of the story is really palpable now. Mm-hmm. That full page spread of where you see the new 52 Wonder Woman, the armored up versions as well, all through the haze of as you're breaking through the brick wall of the cell she's in.
Mm-hmm.
All really just between Liam Sharp and Greg, however those decisions are made, they've made some really great ones. Are we going to have a saved Wonder Woman two issues out, but a lost Barbara Ann Minerva?
And also she is sacrificing herself for her friends, but Veronica Kale makes it clear what her plan is for Barbara Ann, which sounds, not good.
Yeah.
I mean not good for Barbara Ann, but not good for maybe lots and lots of other people as well.
Yeah. You need a demigod to get there, apparently.
Apparently you do.
Yes.
All right. Moving on. Another Wonder Woman title, but this time with Batman.
Batman 66 makes Wonder Woman 77. Jeff Parker, Mark Andraco, David Hahn, Carl Kessel. Look, this is, as they've done a lot of these Batman 66, he's met a lot of characters, and they've all been fun. And this is, just as those are, it's a great mashup, but for me, this has been a great Elseworlds story. As we're seeing the Adam West, Burt Ward iterations of Batman, as they're stopping the Catwoman from stealing some fabulous old book that was in the first issue, because of Talia al Ghul. And then we flash backwards to World War II when the young Bruce and the dad is there and little Bruce, and so's Wonder Woman and Etta and Steve and the rest. It's, look, how can you go wrong with a book that has Ra's al Ghul, Talia al Ghul, Bruce Wayne, Nazis, the occult, the initial Bat Cave? We have lovely pencils and arts in the story. It's cartoony, but it's solid in a way that it doesn't fall apart into that it's this isn't Scooby-Doo, and there's nothing wrong with Scooby-Doo, but you know what
hey,
I mean.
Hey,
you know what I mean, though. It's cartoony but impactful in a way. We have a lovely cliffhanger as the two stories reconnect, as we're back into the 60s, and Roz, well, he's headed to Paradise Island too. So Diana's home, but she's got someone on her tail, and Bruce and Dick looks like they're headed out there too. I'm interested to see where we get Wonder Woman 77. Do we even go 10 years forward out in this? Because we still have like four more issues to go. We've already traversed 25 years. Enjoying the heck out of this, and the fact that all Mike Allred and Laura Allred covers, not so hard to get behind.
All right.
Carol, did you read that one?
Well, this was also...
You're digital, right?
Yeah, this was also something we talked about last time on the show, where we both said we would talk about it, and then I talked about an issue that was like three digital issues ahead of the one that you read.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm just going to not say anything except that... yes, there will be Al Ghul arrivals in the vicinity of Themyscira, and that is super cool. Yeah, it's fun.
All right. What about Batgirl?
What about Batgirl? Batgirl is back in Burnside. It's Hope Larson and Chris Wildgoose, which is just an amazing name. It is the, I don't know if it's a pen name or not, but it's very cool nonetheless. We are in part two of the Son of the Penguin storyline. And in this issue, Barbara goes on a date with Ethan Cobblepot.
Ooh.
Yeah. He's adopted. He's a stepson.
No, he's not.
Isn't that how that worked? No.
No, no. Oh, his mother was a waitress or something in the Penguins Club.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. See that? I didn't write enough notes for that.
it's like when Thor says, Loki's my brother. And then he's adopted.
He's adopted, yeah. I apologize. I apologize to the Cobblepots. Barbara has some misgivings about this. After all, he is the son of the Penguin. He's also behind a really odd app from the last issue, the Safe Streets, where people were being taken from the streets, but not in quite a friendly way. So even though their date goes fairly well, we do have a sort of guest appearance by Magpie, who is now part of the next set of oddball apps, which is the Walk Home. So you can find a way to get yourself protected on the way home. And that leads to a set two with Barbara, who is, as has been through this series, has moved forward, very detective-oriented. Lots of use of her intelligence, which is always fun. Action sequences are well laid out, too. And as we get to the end of this, I think there may be something between Ethan and Barbara in more ways than one.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think, Carolyn?
Well, I liked that the opening scene showed Barbara and Ethan working together, because it makes it a little more interesting that he does seem to be doing some things that are trustworthy, because sort of off the bat, we don't really trust him. So that makes it a little more complicated. And like you, I liked the walk home program.
Yeah.
And I thought the funny thing about it was that the person that, if I'm remembering correctly, the person that Magpie is walking home is like a woman who is trying to get away from kind of a jerky drunk guy.
Yes.
And Magpie kind of wants to attack him, which is sort of amusing because, I mean, you know, she's doing her job, right? She's the safe walk home, and she's also going to avenge this woman who hasn't been treated well that evening. So it's kind of funny because it's not like Magpie is stealing something shiny, which is what she's usually doing.
Yeah.
And I also liked that you, like you said, Barbara's detective work. It seems to, when the way that they portray her recognizing Magpie is like all of these faces are drawn behind her, like she's mm-hmm. cycling through her memory for the faces, which then made me wonder, remember that thing when she was in Asia and she kind of turned her memory off or
yes.
something?
Yeah, because otherwise she couldn't fight as effectively.
Ugh, don't even start me on that. That's just, you know, because a lady can't handle remembering things and fighting at the same time. So she's got to turn one of them off. All right. Anyway.
Yeah.
But did we see her, quote unquote, turn it back on? And I just don't remember that.
Yes. At the end, it seemed like she was trying to do that and it hadn't all come back yet. But this does seem like more of that eidetic memory return.
Okay. Okay. So she did. There was kind of a thing that specifically said she was turning it back on. All right. Yeah, so I think that they're continuing the mystery of villainous gentrification and making fun of hipster bars. And
in this case, it's a laundromat, right?
It is, right. Yeah. And a little bit of social commentary that Alicia's in a bad mood because a doctor misgendered her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And didn't apologize, and she makes it clear that that is not cool, and people need to do better. But yeah, we'll see what happens with Ethan. I don't trust him.
All right, staying in the Bat universe, we had a new issue of Detective Comics this week.
Yes.
We're up to number 951. It is League of Shadows Part 1. And we, of course, have James Tynion the IV, Christian Juche. I'm hoping I have that close to being right. We have so many parts of this story. We're flashing back to the colony and what Jacob Cain was doing with what we were getting from Cassandra in the last issue. The teamwork is... It's still working, but it seems as if there are some fractures. We have lost a character or two. Shiva is her usual not nice person self here. And I'll just leave it at that. There's some awful, awful things being done to these characters. We have a Kate Kane who's has a little smile here and there. She's actually sort of lightening some, and then when the story shifts, Bruce is not a firm believer in this whole idea of the League of Shadows, which strikes me as a little odd. But he gets a very close-up look when he's called in to the mayor's office to help sort of get things back on track. They're looking for some information, and he gets a terrible surprise, gets framed for some bad stuff. Of course, that's not going to hold for too long. When he gets back to headquarters and Jacob is calling out, he and Kate calls in the question, their relationship, how that all works. I was a little concerned as the focus of the book was sort of changing, we started losing characters, that this was going to fall for me a little bit. Stayed very, very strong. Carolyn, you read Detective also?
I did. And the part about Batman being framed for something bothered me because I feel like, aren't we way past police? I mean, if he's in a room with, let's just say it, you know, a dead person, Do the police really go immediately to Batman killed this person? Is that the universe that we have? Because I guess I'm not keeping track well. No, I'm not even being sarcastic. I mean, is that the way this universe is set up and I just don't remember it? Do the cops not trust him? Anyone?
I don't know.
Even though the body is skewered to the wall with a bunch of swords with bats on the end of them.
Oh, come on.
You would still think that Batman had earned enough goodwill points.
He doesn't use swords. When does Batman use swords?
Somewhere in the New 52, I bet he did.
Well, okay, fighting Ra's al Ghul in the 70s with a cap on and no shirt. But other than that...
Well, you went in Rome.
Yeah, right. But yeah, I mean, this was definitely a bit bloody for me. But that part about the police kind of bugged me. Bob, you read it as that Batman didn't feel like the League was that much of a threat. I read it more like he was sort of trusting in himself, like he would know they were coming or something.
Okay. No, I caught it. I just as you're saying, it's the way I sort of looked at it. And you may be more right than I. I'll reread it.
No, I don't. I'm not sure. And did you feel like Kate maybe was trusting her father a little bit?
I definitely think so.
Okay. And I also liked that Cassandra, she was not as central in this as she was in that initial story in number 950, but I liked that it opens with it. She sort of opens and closes it because it opens with Batman and Batwoman talking about her and how they're concerned about her, and Batman admitting immediately, as well he should, that if he ever got in a fight with Cassandra, she would win, because everybody knows she's like the ultimate warrior in the DC universe. And I like that it closes with her, that she figures out what's going on. I'm glad that they're centering her again.
Yeah, absolutely. Fun issue. Right. Fun issue.
Yeah, I mean, Stephanie dropped out a bit here, but I assume she'll be back.
Somewhere down the road, and I think somewhere in this Watchmen to-do that's coming.
Yeah.
We'll see another character come back.
Hmm.
I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm. All right. Supergirl. Being Super, number 2.
Oh.
So good.
So good. You want to take lead on this one then? Go for it, Carolyn.
Okay. Supergirl being super, number two. Mariko Tamaki, Joelle Jones, and Kelly Fitzpatrick on covers. Look, let me just say first off that when I read issue one, I love this creative team, right? I knew that I would. But when I read issue one of Supergirl being super, I really did think to myself, yeah, I really liked this story in 1997 when it was called Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, shit.
No, look, you know, everybody, you know, I like Buffy, but that's what it felt like to me. And I was disappointed, and I thought it was good, but I just thought, what are you going to do to make it different? And so I can say on the very next issue, they've sunk their hooks in me. They've got me.
Okay, there you go.
This is like, it was so good. This issue is jam-packed. It feels like a 100-page book, you know, not a 20-something page book. There's a tragedy, and it's dealt with really well, particularly in the small moments. I mean, everybody has, I assume, gone through some kind of tragedy like this. And so you can see the truth in those little moments, little conversations between people, moments where things feel normal and moments when they don't. And you feel like maybe you're acting inappropriately. You're not sure how to act. It's different with different people. And there's also, there's teen angst and there's parental concern. And then in the background, there's power fluctuations, and the name Kara Zor-El is said out loud. There's just a lot going on. It's very nuanced. The art, I mean, I don't know what else I can say about Joelle Jones that hasn't already been said, but she does everything well. She does a quiet character moment well. She does super duper action well. I just thought it was fantastic. What did you all think?
Everything you said. It is very, very bad pun. It is super. Sorry. Someone had to say it. It is beautifully done at every possible level a story like this can be without falling into the cliches you'd expect. And as you're saying, Carol, it could have easily come apart at the seams trying to be everything at once. And because I think it stayed with a laser focus on, okay, it is this terrible thing that happened in the last issue. How does Kara react? Her moments with Dolly at the Burger Shack when they are trying to turn themselves back into themselves,
mm-hmm.
was contrasted by a scene a little before when Kara just takes off running, and it's her musings to herself that are at once so perfectly teenaged and so grown up at the same time. She's at that spot in between. And the idea that she has to have responsibility for these things and others is starting to come together, just so beautifully, beautifully done. And we have the moment at Jen's services where her little sister's up there.
Yeah.
And you want to just say, no, we've seen those, and I can't. It was just so real. Kara is beginning to have visions that are getting clearer of what her past might have been. There are some things going in the background that in the last issue with their coach gave them these sort of Fitbit bracelets.
Yeah.
And there was some talk about why do they care about all this? Does this have like, you know, Wi-Fi?
Why is it just the three of us?
Yeah.
Definitely.
And that gets mentioned here too. So I think that's going to swirl together and perhaps tie us in with a bigger story as well. I know these are bi-monthly, and they're kind of pricey, folks. You know, we are recommending a $7 book here. But it is worth every penny. It's square-bound, and it is just jam-packed. It's not one of these. It's filled with ads. It is nothing but story.
Yeah, yeah. Two moments from this that really stuck out to me. One, the blanket that Kara wears to prevent shock.
Mm-hmm.
Loved mm-hmm. the reflection artwork mm-hmm. in it. And two, the fact that she ate so much cereal. Like, I understand that. And I'm the dry cereal eater. So just box of cereal, hand right in there, just going after it. I'm like, I know that. I know that feeling. It's when you don't know what else to do or what else to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Just little stuff like the girls' texts to each other were mm-hmm. so good, and how the way the mother texts is more like a letter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love, mom.
All right, we've got.
Are we doing 3 issues for that, or is it 5? Do we know offhand?
I don't know.
I thought it was 5.
It might be 5.
Yeah. Surely 5. I'm not ready to let this one go.
No.
I will be at 5, but not at 3.
And my second question is. My second question is Joelle Jones doing anything else? Is her name on anything else for DC stuff?
Not yet, but she did sign an exclusive, so maybe she's working on something.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, man.
Well, there's so many things I'd like to see her do. So anything she'd like would be fine by me.
Yeah.
And Lady Killer 2 is a week from tomorrow, or week from today, I should say.
Mm. All right. We've got 2 more books on our on deck right now. Carolyn, tell us a little bit about Batman Beyond.
Okay. Well, first I should ask, did all of you, I mean, even if you haven't read it, did you watch the Batman Beyond cartoon when it was on?
I did watch some, yes.
Okay. Because, I mean, I did watch it. I approached it with skepticism way back when, and it totally won me over. I was worried they were just going to make it like a guy who's just like Bruce Wayne, but he's younger and whatever. And it's really not that. I mean, the character of Terry is a good character in his own right, and his interactions with sort of older, grumpy Bruce are great. And Commissioner Barbara Gordon, his friend Max, who helps him out, his girlfriend Dana, and the gang, the Jokers, that sort of are trying to run Gotham City in a few decades from now. So I've just said all that because I feel like people don't talk about Batman Beyond very much. And so that's just a little bit of background of it. I have read most Batman Beyond comics, and they've been kind of uneven, but still worth checking out if you can get trade paperbacks and stuff. Anyway, so this is like the new Batman Beyond. This is number 5. And this is part 5 of a 5-part arc. That arc is called Escaping the Grave. So you can guess at who might be trying to escape the grave in this situation. So anyway, the thing is that major stuff happens in this issue. So if you have ever liked Batman Beyond or even Batman, I think that you would like it. So it has all the characters that were on the old show and have been around in Batman Beyond comics. There is someone who escapes the grave, but I can't say who it is. And you think it's someone else, and then it turns out to be this other person, and it's very twisty, which is cool. The only thing that kind of gave me pause is that Terry, at least in this issue, Terry's body is kind of muscular. And that kind of surprised me because I felt like one of the ways he was sort of set apart was that he was just really more kind of thin and acrobatic and reliant on gadgets and stuff like that. And the suit is a little bit different in a way that is a little bit disconcerting, just a couple little tweaks on the suit that are different. But other than those minor things, I would say that the voices of the characters are really captured here, and the art is cool. And I would say, check it out. If you're going to start now, I would either just start with the next issue, number 6, because it's a new arc, or if you read 1 through 5, you know, they really set up the characters and the context, the town, the city, I should say, really well.
Oh. So give it,
yeah.
All right. Last book of the podcast, Bob.
It is a very, very twisted piece of work called Clean Room, number 16. Gail Simone, the new artist on this, is Walter Giovanni, who did Red Sonja with Ms. Simone, and Quentin Winter on colors. We open with what seems a very jarring sequence of Chloe Pierce and her fiancé, Philip, who died at the start of the series in the beginning here, and they're just sitting on the porch having a beer. hold time out. You know, because we had a sort of an issue in between, and it's, where were we? And then we flash forward to, yes, well, Chloe and Killian are trapped inside a serial killer named Artis Greenhand's mind because he's taking control of the clean room itself. While this is going on, Astrid Mueller is visiting with her rather possessed and evil baby niece, who is actually an alien, who is describing the entire plan out of how they're going to shut off everything for a couple of days and let people start to go crazy when they begin to feed only their message through every electronic device and television set. And the first place they're going to start with is basically her foundation and take out her people. And we're back and forth. This is a story told on multiple stages. We get to see an Astrid who, over these events, has actually had an arc where you thought she was one person at the beginning, she has not softened, but she has become a little more receptive to what other people are feeling, which is odd considering she was running this self-help foundation where it seemed she didn't care at all as long as she was putting her own agenda forward and lining her own pockets. But it isn't that at all as the series has wound down. Well, now, I shouldn't say wound down. I'm not cursing this book, everybody. I think Clean Room will continue and quite wonderfully as we go here. We have great battle sequences, horrendous bloody horror sequences, scary stuff, funny stuff. It is Gail Simone at her best in a way that when she's great on Batgirl, was great on Wonder Woman, when she's doing some of these creator-owned things or these oddball little pieces, if you've read any of Gail's tweets, if you've spent any time reading her commentary about other books, there's a twisted, angry old man somewhere inside her who likes bitching and moaning and telling sort of grimy, ugly stories, but they're leavened with such dark humor. And this is it. This is brilliant and weird and twisted and horrific and amazing. Clean Room number 16.
All right. Woo. I feel like we got a lot of books.
That was a marathon. You bang that out.
Yeah.
All right. Good job, guys. Well, that's going to be it for this week's episode of Talking Comics. And as always, you can send us comments or questions through our email podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. We are also on Twitter @TalkingComics. Don't forget to check out talkingcomicbooks.com for all our reviews, articles, columns, news, commentaries, for everything, as well as podcasts, all our sister podcasts. Legendary Runs just did Dan Slott's She-Hulk. Our next one is Seven Soldiers of Victory?
From the 1940s?
No. Seven Soldiers. Whatever one that Grant Morrison did. I don't know.
It's the newer one.
The newer one, yes. Morrison.
Morrison. Good luck.
Good luck with that.
See you in 5 weeks.
pretty much. Also, D&D podcast, movies, Talking Valiant, Talking Games, Talking Everything. We've just got something for everyone there. Joey, where can our listeners find you?
At Joey Brugino.
And Carolyn?
CocaC at oldwestbury.edu.
And Bob, where can listeners reach you?
Bob Ryer at TalkingComicBooks.com.
Wow, I was anticipating something like find me under a rock
gotta,
over there.
Gotta throw you off every now and again.
Wow. and I am on Twitter @MegaMaramon. So for Bob.
Happy New Comic Book Day.
Joey.
Logan.
And Carolyn.
America number one today.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one.
I'm Mara Wood. Until next time, to be continued.